I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. In the novel Secrets by our guest Nuruddin Farah, the central character and narrator named Kalaman is a technologically modern Somali man. He's a computer consultant with his own startup business in Mogadishu, but his inner life glows with the complexity of memories of a pre-modern childhood. Here's a little taste of Kalaman's thinking, a little taste of Nuruddin Farah's writing. We dwelt in a world of make-believe, my father and I, Kalaman says. When my mother was in an agreeable mood, then all three of us showered together, jets of shivery water, with me standing between them, playful, full of rejoicing. I loved falling asleep to my father's lullaby singing, a lullaby he himself would compose. In my father's version, mother rides away on an elephant traveling northward to a country devastated by internecine wars and famines. At three, Kalaman writes, I could write my name in the defunct Somali script, in Arabic and in Roman orthography. I could read faster than I could speak an entire sentence in any tongue. In this novel, Secrets, Kalaman is living through a cultural crisis and a personal identity crisis. He doesn't know if that father is really his father. And it's all taking place in the middle of a war emergency in Somalia in the early 1990s. This is the material from which Nuruddin Farah has made a world reputation in English fiction and for which he won the Newstat Prize 2 years ago. Nuruddin Farah's novels encompass bird lore, Islamic law, Somali clan wars, robust sex in many forms, a vast knowledge of nature and of Christian and pagan mythology. His underlying question may be how a world economy and culture are going to reshape and maybe threaten that African consciousness. Connection listeners, our guest is one of the celebrated African artists who's trying to envision and maybe teach the African mind of the new century. Make the connection with Nuruddin Farah at 1-800-423-8255. Nuruddin Farah joins us from a studio in Detroit. Welcome, Mr. Farah. We admire your work.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
There's so much Somali wisdom and proverbs and folklore in this book. I thought maybe we ought to just begin by asking you to tell us, who are the Somalis and what is their consciousness all about in East Africa there, half into the Arab world, at least more than half maybe into the African world?
Well, if you happen to be in a place like the northeastern part of Somalia, in the northeastern region, and you stand on a very clear day on the coastal, on the littoral area, you would actually be able to see the Yemeni Arab coast. And if you look in any direction, you are likely to encounter dhows coming from some Arab country. Hmm. If, however, you look in the other direction, you are very close to Djibouti, to Eritrea, to everywhere. In other words, as a Somali, I was brought up in a world with a multiplicity of views, with a multiplicity of cultures, where cultures were weaved into one another, where the Islamic, the pre-Islamic, I wouldn't call it pagan, but the pre-Islamic worldviews enriched one's life. Hmm. Now, the question, who am I to a Somali, means a great deal nowadays, especially because of the crises in which we are engulfed because of the internecine wars that are taking place. The question, who am I, obviously, is a question so very important that people are prepared to kill one another, to save one another. And the question, who am I, is the question that gives impetus, that gives energy to the novel. Well, basically, what some of the Somalis do is to find an easy answer to a very, very complex question. They find an easy answer by simply saying, I am the son of my father, and therefore the son of a clan, son of a family. And for that reason, they commit themselves to an ideology in which blood dominates, blood kinship, blood loyalty to the blood, loyalty to an idea that excludes everything else. The basic question, let's say, that I asked myself when embarking on writing Secrets was, what if one's father, I'm not saying myself, but I'm saying, what if one's father is not one's father, biologically speaking. How would one find oneself in the context of a Somalia obsessed with lineage, obsessed with blood loyalty, obsessed with payments to toward that blood allegiance? And the question therefore becomes quite important also, because who am I in terms of a Somali is also very important, because when I was growing up, and I grew up in the Ogaden, the Somali-speaking part, now, and the Ethiopia, for example.
This is in the south?
This is to the west of Somalia.
Okay.
In Ethiopia, currently known as Region 5 in Ethiopia. Mm. When I kept asking myself the question, you see, am I an Ethiopian? Am I a Somali? What makes me different from the other nationalities in Ethiopia? Why am I who I am? These were also similar questions that I asked myself, and that some characters like Askar, who enrolls in a, you know, is recruited into the Western Somali Liberation Front fighting against Ethiopia, also asked himself these questions. These are questions that one cannot answer easily, existentially, politically, mythically, philosophically. They come up all the time. Mm. And being someone interested in finding a multiplicity of answers, this is one of the things that I try to do in the novels, usually in trilogies of novels.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say it, because I think it's what the reader catches on to in the book, that these are enormously tricky and interesting, multi-layered questions in a society that is that has more layers than one can count, really. There's so much local life in the head of this young man. I mean, memories of his pet monkey, and real scorpions, real elephants, real termites, real birds that he knows intimately, real deeply interesting and perplexing family stories from his may or may not be grandfather, Nono, and this kind of thing. It seemed to me the whole puzzle of the novel, and it's one that everybody can get into, is kind of how to preserve in a modern world the diversity, the richness, the complexity, but also the kind of comprehensive embrace that you give to all of this past. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, this is one of the things we're talking about. Principally, my interest is also to collapse boundaries between the animal and the human world. In a world in which, on a practical level, because of space and because of the way people live, sometimes people live in the same room, so to speak, as a goat or as a chicken or as another animal. And in Somali mythology and Somali ancestral history, almost every family has a totem. And I remember being brought up, my mother used to say that her family's totem was a snake. And certain snakes, we were not allowed to, for example, kill certain snakes. And the reason is because the distinctions that are currently made in the modern world between the animal and the human world, these distinctions did not matter. In a world in which it was all inclusive, in a world in which the person relied on the continued existence of the soil in order to nourish the body. And it's only after nourishment of the body that the soul naturally found its own space, wherever it is. Mm. And it's in that space that one finds memories, memories that link humans and animals, memories that allow humans to shift, to shape-shift, and to become, at times through the powers of magic, at times through the powers of their ability to transform themselves into something else. There were some people who were believed to be endowed with the powers of magic so that they could become animals if they so choose, if they so chose. Mm.
This consciousness in which, you know, animals are so alive and magic is so important, has a tremendous kind of allure, especially for people who've left it. In this novel, Secrets, there are two exiles that return from the United States, and when they're asked why they came back, one of them says, "We both feel unfulfilled." So there's huge power in this past. At the same time you read this novel, you feel this past is terribly endangered. How is it?
Well, the past is endangered because certain memories are being privileged over other memories. Currently, the memories that are being privileged are the memories of certain families that insist that things must be done the way they like. Not only families, but also individuals, really. And when I hear, for example, well, at the initial, in the comments that you gave, you spoke of clan warfares. Now, normally I insist that there is, in Somalia, there is no clan warfare. There are persons, perhaps with names, some known to Americans, some not, who claim to represent certain clan families, and therefore who have terrorized the nation, the Somali nation, into turpitude. Hmm. And therefore there are no two families, there are no two clans who are actually warring against each other. And the reason is because the families that are now at war in Mogadishu, they have no territorial contiguity. There are no, they share no border in terms of being clan families, because every clan in Somalia owns a given, or historically, were said to own a given territory. What is at stake in Somalia is not a war between clans, so to speak, as it is a war between persons who wish to privilege their own ancestral memories of others, one. Two, persons who are so greedy to take power that they would do anything. In other words, destroy not only the entire nation, but destroy everything in order to become a president of the country. And therefore, when I hear of Warlord X fighting against Warlord Why, I do not see two clans warring, yes, but I see two personalities at loggerheads with each other, prepared to kill one another. This is one of the reasons why I never mention the names of any clans or the names of any of the so-called warlords.
You haven't lived in Somalia for a while. Can you go back there? Are you persona non grata? Are you endangered there?
I haven't lived for many years because I fell out with the former head of state.
Syed Barre?
Syed Barre, in view of the fact that I had written a trilogy of novels on dictatorship. I have recently been able to return. And if I am able to return and I can't now, it's because I have a family. And since you can't raise a family and there are no schools in Somalia, I am trying to postpone my return until it is peaceable enough so that I can return and help in the reconstruction.
Our guest is Nuruddin Farah, who won the Neustadt Prize, some rank it just below the Nobel, for literature in 1998. He's written any number of novels. The one at hand, the one I've read, is Secrets. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255, a 1-800-423-TALK. Could I just ask in a general way, are these questions that you raise, I suppose about warfare, but more generally about the who am I questions, identity questions, do you see these as questions sort of Africa-wide? Are these the problems that, or the issues that sort of stir African culture and politics over the whole continent, would you say?
I would say that it's a question that practically everybody asks himself these days in Africa. I would say it's the topic of conversation whenever two Somalis meet. One, when there are five Somalis in the same room, then, you know, you have some kind of a war going on.
Let us listen in on the conversation. When two Somalis meet and talk and raise the sort of who am I question, how does it go?
Well, they usually agree on the very things that many people do not wish to understand or do not understand, and that the in Somalia, the clan is dead. In Somalia, the clan is an obsession. This is what most Somalis agree. And therefore, they say to themselves, how can we help one another so that we get out of the morass that we have been thrown into? Insofar as I'm concerned, I define the clan or the members of a clan as a crowd standing under a jetty, sheltering from a storm. For as long as the storm is raging, the crowd will shelter in the same shelter, hoping for the storm to die or to die out. And while they are doing that, they wait and wait and are a member of the same crowd, which may be turned into a mob if something were to go wrong. Now, it's the same crowd, the clan being a crowd, that would obviously become individuals as soon as the storm has gone. Now, the clan, members of the clan are usually members of the same, in inverted commas, family, who come together, in inverted commas, to help one another or to support one another politically, ideologically, and so on and so forth. Every Somali is an individual until there is a crisis. That's the point that I'm trying to make. And the reason why Kalaman asks himself these questions, it is because he knows that Somalia is on the verge of a final collapse. And therefore, that's what he is trying to do. Now, I say the final collapse because the Somali civil war can be traced back to the war that took place between Somalia and Ethiopia, which was an explosive war, because Somalis went and invaded the Somali-speaking the Ethiopia in order to regain the territory known as the Somali-speaking territory known as the Ogaden, which is currently in Ethiopia. When the Somalis lost the war and returned to Mogadishu defeated, it was, one hoped that Siad Barre, the dictator then, would resign. He did not. The defeat, because Somalis were defeated in the Ogaden War, the defeat created an infestation in the Somali body politic. That defeat continued to erode the integrity, the dignity of the Somali nation, which obviously eventually made Somalis reliant on food aid from outside. Hence my novel, Gifts, foreign aid upon which the Somali people fed because they could not feed themselves. And this was because they spent all their money and energy on a war in which they were defeated. Finally, after many years of that infestation of defeat, what happened was the explosive war became an implosive war, which is what the civil war is. Now, therefore, when the novel starts, at least when Secret starts, we are on the verge, of a war, and we become witnesses. We become witnesses to what is taking place, to the turmoil, to the storm that's raging. And because the storm is raging, you have a crowd and you have members of a clan, and everybody goes back to who they think they are.
There are storms raging all around this young man, Kalaman, and in his head, too, in his memory. Our guest, Nuruddin Farah, won the Neustadt Prize for Literature in 1998. The likes of Nadine Gordimer, Ishmael Reed, the American, Chinua Achebe, Robert Coover, Salman Rushdie, are the sorts of people who all call him one of Africa's great writers, one of the world's great novelists. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. Abdi is on the line.
Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Abdi.
Ahlan wa sahlan, Nuruddin. Hi. As a Somali writer and part of this generation of African writers, there's nothing greater than listening to Nuruddin Farah, and the level of work that he has done is just profound and deep and amazing. I'm in the middle of classes, and I teach at the Boston Arts Academy, and my students are in the process of reading Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart. And the kind of work that Mr. Farah has done for Somali identity and for the general African identity, and in the larger context of who we are and what our sensibilities are, is just an amazing.
You know this "Who am I?" question, Abdi?
I am learning it from Mr. Farah.
So am I.
I read his novels. And who are the Somalis? And how do they resolve this tension of being African and also having a strong Arabic heritage? And it seems to me that with the Somali, there's this also a larger context, a kind of a folk that's expanding, that includes other sections of Africa, South, West, and it's there in secrets. And what's really amazing for me to watch is the way in which Mr. Farah is actually creating a kind of a pan-African folk.
Catch your breath, Abdi. We are listening to The Connection. Go ahead, Abdi.
And what emerges out of Secrets and many of his novels is a sincere consideration of the role of women in Somali culture as an important part of this larger historical continuity. And for me as a writer, it's really interesting that how the ways in which Mr. Farah has resolved the historical tensions, the tensions with identity, and solved it aesthetically and in the form the novel, a form that, you know, that is historically a Western form.
Resolved it how, Abdi? In the sense that Kalaman, at the end of this novel, has discovered that his father is not his father, and he'll never know really who his father was. I mean, he'll never nail the question of the past.
Well, does somebody really need to know one's biological father? That's the one of the other questions, mm-hmm. for example. And in the sense that he accepts towards the end of the novel, I hate to make this form of judgment, but I think he accepts towards the end of the novel that his grandfather is his grandfather. And logically, therefore, accepts that his father is his father, although he's not biologically his father.
Logically, but not biologically.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's quite interesting that I think Mr. Farah strikes at the notion of clannish, clannism, and this sense of what our bloodlines are. I think in the postmodern world, to borrow something out of Salman Rushdie, you know, we are diverse. We're sort of mongrels in many ways, and that is not a negative or a pejorative. I think it just recognizes the level of complexity that human beings possess, and that Kalaman's parentage is a question mark, is really of no consequence in the end, because what we have is a character who's very much a contemporary, recognizable in my own life and the people that I meet. And this is the kind of modern consciousness that we all take part in.
Is that an astute reading here, Mr. Farah?
I think it is. But also, I would like to add, for example, that in Maps, the first part in the trilogy, as well as in Gifts and in Secrets, the idea of being the nation, the Somali nation, the metaphor that works in the trilogy, in this particular trilogy, is that of an orphan. And the idea of the novel comes from an Italian proverb that goes something like, Lo sconfitto è orfano, le vincita c'ha 100 padre, which when you translate means defeat is an orphan, victory has 100 claimants, in other words, fathers.
Mm.
And the reason is because when something terrible happens, nobody wants to be associated with defeat. Nobody wants to be associated with defeat. Whereas when there is a crisis, when there is a crisis, nobody wants to be associated with it. Whereas when there is success, everybody wants to be part of that success. Now, if you take metaphorically also, Siad Barre, the former dictator, used to call himself the father of the nation. But by losing the war in the Ogaden, coming back defeated and not resigning, Siad Barre has denied the nation of Somalia the honor of being a parent of the nation, the father of the nation. From then on, Somalis, for me, were actually like an orphan. Mm. Hence, the first novel in Maps, there is an orphan whose father, incidentally, is Ali Muhammad Hamari. Hamari.
Let's take a short break. We'll be back in just a few moments. Our guest is the celebrated Somalian novelist, one of the great writers of Africa, Nuruddin Farah. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at allaire.com. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. Nuruddin Farah is our guest, the Somalian novelist. I interrupted you a moment ago, Mr. Farah. I wish you'd just continue, and our friend Abdi is still with us.
Yes, so you see, his nickname, the father, Askari's father, who obviously dies even before Askari is born, is Hamari. Now, the name, the local name for Mogadishu is Hamar. So instead of having the name of a clan or the name of anything, he is a Hamari, and the reason is because he came from the city of Hamar, which is the city of Mogadishu, for the local name for Mogadishu. So the central theme of the trilogy, you could say, is that of a nation that has been made an orphan. Hmm. A nation with no leaders, a nation with no leadership, a nation in which no one respects anyone for what they are or for who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That is the and in Secrets, therefore, you could see that the idea of the orphan is still continuing. But this man is an orphan who has parents who love him. But the question, who am I, or whose son am I, takes precedence over all else, especially when the past catches up with him.
Well, it's clear at the beginning that Kalaman is a man who's interested in the origins of things, including himself. And he does resolve it in the sense that he learns to live with a kind of huge mystery about it. I keep wondering, let me go back one sec. In the novel, people speak about two traditional Somali ideas, Naro and Nabsi, a kind of sixth sense for people who've suffered misfortune in the case of Naro, and Nabsi is a kind of response to it by other people. An old elusive sort of philosophical and psychological idea. It's deep in the mind of this man, Kalaman. He's also a techie. He's also a salesman. He's also a sort of modern computer guy. The question in my mind is sort of in among 21st century Africans, how do you hope to see these tensions of education and the elements of their thinking resolved? How much of the old wisdom of Somalia is young Kalaman going to remember in a new global economy of computer buffs like himself?
Well, sadly, the new technological world is taking over. Sadly, the new technological world is a glitter of gold that attracts most young people. And the question, can the tensions be resolved? I suppose the tensions cannot be resolved, because if they were able to be resolved, then they would be resolved in someone like myself. Mm. And the reason is because my parents were semi-literate. My mother was an oral poet, but she did not know how to read or write in any language. My father was semi-literate. He spoke some Arabic, some English, let's say a great deal of Swahili, but he wasn't literate in the way that I am. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I'm one of those who were brought up in a multiplicity of cultures. Therefore, I feel enriched by this. Sadly, and this is why I say sadly, it's because people like Kalaman are being given less space in the Somali body politic at the moment. This is why there is a civil war. This is why the question, who am I, is resolved through the use of the gun, which is illogical insofar as I'm concerned.
Abdi, speak for yourself in terms of resolving these tensions.
I think in many ways it's an ongoing process. I think what Mr. Farah and his work offers are some solutions, some interesting ways of addressing the issue of identity. To much of Mr. Farah's credit, I think Secrets is perhaps one of the most lyrical novels that I've read in a long time, and I think what we have here is an important testament, a human testament that goes beyond our narrow geopolitics and issues around clan and roots and blood, and it begins to offer a very, very sort of democratic vision of the world. And Mr. Farah's inclusiveness. I mean, for example, Shilungu, who is a union organizer in America, the shapeshifter that she is, her brother, who is homosexual or bisexual. These are identities. These are important human characters that are not part of mainstream African literatures. And what Mr. Farah is doing is actually giving voice to certain undercultures, cultures that are denied voice on the African continent. And this is what's very, very progressive, what's so inspiring about Mr. Farah's
work. Abdi, you had your own testimony in your own voice. Do you want to present that to Mr. Farah?
Yes, as the gifts exchanging process goes, I'd like to share a poem that was published in Agni in 1996, and it's called Nuruddin Farah. I hear the city is guarded against itself by 10 countries, spreading out with wheat, injections, ice packs, and postcards. The Germans make more dough than anybody. Equator runs all reels on 4th Street. Snipers drill their bullets, and protect and circle above, people are with hope. You live in African states to open your window to see home. For me, it's Pasolini's Medea, stadium of us lining the shore. As the Corinthians, we are juggling pieces of U.S. helicopters, jeweled on the shore like a spiritus body, and sex tunes boom from Toyotas. I'm incredibly delighted to be sharing in this conversation. As a writer, it means worlds to me to be in part of this conversation with Mr. Farah.
Always a tremendous pleasure to hear from you, Abdi. Abdi Ali, thank you enormously for the poem. Thank you for addressing it to Nuruddin Farah.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Abdi.
1-800-423-8255. Joins the connection with the Somali novelist Nuruddin Farah. Ahmed is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome, Ahmed.
Hi, Nuruddin. Hi, hello. Chris. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Yeah, I'm Ahmed Yusuf. I'm calling from Boston. And I haven't read the book, but I'm glad you are here and you are talking to the world. I'm glad to hear that somebody who is from an abandoned country, the people are abandoned, the country is abandoned, but you are here today, and I'm glad to talk to you. I've got two questions. One is, one thing I know, I didn't read the book, but I have seen angry faces on the streets of Boston about this book, Somali Angry Faces, because they do understand that this book, The Secret, is out of culture. It's different from the one I read when I was in the middle school from a crooked rape. And the other thing is the Somali situation, which you have explicitly spoken about it for, you know, in detail. What is your contribution to the current Somali situation? You know for a fact that so there is international damage on the Somali people. The people they trusted on earth, the American public, and the Somali public are totally separated and by the hideous war in Mogadishu, which I understand lately that people said it was the work of Saudi man who is in the hiding now. And I am wondering that we need people like you to stand up and speak out and give the American people an apology about the dragging of the dead, you know, man's body in the streets. That was shame. And we have to apologize and accept this. The other point is that...
Who is we in this case, Ahmed?
Somalis. I'm Somali, so I am saying we when I'm talking to Nuruddin.
All right.
And
Let's put the question to him.
Yes, the question is, Mr. Nuruddin, what's your contribution to the current Somali situation? And... what are your plans to rescue the Somali land, the Somali country, the beautiful rivers, the land, the trees, the people? That's one question. The second question is why you were for a long time in hiding and did not respond to the legacy of the Somali people? Why you didn't come
okay.
to that help?
Ahmed, thank you for the question.
Well, I don't think I've been in hiding. I think my job as a writer is to continue writing, and my job is to not to participate in ugly politics in which bad things are done, Somali people are made more damaged, and so on and so forth, but to take the damaged memory of the Somali and to do the best that I can with it. I don't know. You see, the relationship between Americans and the Somalis, the relationship between Americans and the Somalis have not been discussed between Somalis and Americans. And therefore, as a Somali, my response to the debate that should take place between Somalis and American readers is that I'm now currently working on a novel about the situation in which Americans are also part of the story. I don't know whether it is premature for me to give an apology in the sense that have we heard any apologies from the Americans so far? We all know that it has been well-intentioned, but we haven't really spoken about this in a public sort of way. Somalis have sat in rooms and talked about it. The Americans have sat in their rooms and have spoken about it. We need to do what you would call, in South African terms, because I live in Cape Town, we need to do what is known as truth and reconciliation. Mm. And that will take a longer time. And people will have to apologize. But before we even apologize to the Americans, more and more Somalis will have to apologize to other Somalis because we've done damage to one another and practiced a kind of Holocaust on ourselves, killed one another. And therefore, we need to find out by speaking about this quite openly, and also by accepting our part in the blame. Because what I've discovered through interviews I've done with very many Somalis in a nonfiction book, which I published called Yesterday, Tomorrow, which is now available, I have discovered that Somalis do not wish to take part in the blame of what they have done. Every Somali claims to be innocent. Naturally, every American will also claim to be innocent.
Could I ask you a more general question?
Yes, please.
And that is sort of where you see the role of the artist and the writer in all this. You've spoken of your literary career as a project to keep my country alive by writing about it, but lots of other writers, I mean, like Wole Soyinka, for example, have been deeply embattled in the day-to-day politics of their countries. Is this something you want to do? Is it something you think writers should do? Or is there another place for you?
I don't think it's my place to be embattled in the national politics. I think it's my role to come in and to comment, to record, to enter the debate and say what I as a person feel and what I think people should do. But it's not my place to enter politics. And the reason is because if I enter politics, then I obviously will not have time to write my novels. Novels that sometimes make people very angry. I understand that Ahmed Yusuf was saying that he saw angry faces. Now, I don't know what these people are angry about. I am told that people are angry about the explicit nature of sex in the novel. I would say that I am, in a sense, not surprised that Somalis are shocked by sex. Somalis being the very people who are not shocked by ugly incidents that take place in their own country, and yet who are shocked because they hear of a homosexual incident. Homosexuality happens in Somalia as it happens anywhere else. Sex happens anywhere else. And sex is part of the story of secrets, in the sense that it is about, you know, is your father your father? And unless there is sex, there can be, we can't talk about progeny until we talk about sex. Shocked. Why are Somalis shocked? I think they are being naive and they are being probably unkind, both to themselves and to me, if they are shocked about sex when they're not shocked about an incident which took place in Mogadishu, for example, when an imam or two imams were watching when women were being raped inside a mosque. I have not heard any Somali comment on that sacrilege. And yet they talk about, you know, a man and a woman making love, or, you know, about a homosexual incident as if this was the end of the earth. The end of the earth had taken place when women were raped inside a mosque with an imam watching. That, I think, is more shocking.
Mm. Do people object to the politics of your novels? Maybe we'll come back to that after break. Our guest is Nuruddin Farah. The novel we're talking about mostly is Secrets. You're listening to The Connection from WBUR Boston. Nuruddin Farah, stand by for a call. 1-800-423-8255 is The Connection phone. Tom is on the line.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello, Tom.
How are you? I was involved with Somalia in the mid-80s, near the end of my government career with the Defense Department in foreign military sales, in a very naive way. I didn't know much about Somalia. And it began the end of my disenchantment with the way we have treated Africa. And I could I've learned more subsequently about it. And if anybody is...
What was American policy up to in Somalia in the 80s, Tom?
Well, I was involved at that time with building a command and control system. I worked for the Air Force for that wonderful Mr. Barry, who I didn't know was such a despot, which was over the issues of the Ogaden region with Ethiopia. And we played ping pong with Ethiopia and Somalia and probably Sudan, if you want to take the whole region. And we have tossed them around like little ping pong balls. And if anybody is to blame for the breakup of Somalia, it is truly lies with the West, beginning with the end of colonization with the English and the Italian. And I'm sad of that because I'm of Italian extraction. Then with the incursion of the Cold War and the way we dealt with it, we only used Somalia to our own exploit to exploit it. The Civil War was bound to happen. It was created by this setup that we had. And
were we exploiting it truly, or were we containing communism, or what?
No, Chris, it's that old containing communism. It was nothing to do, because that was the area in which we enter into the oil regions of the Arab nations.
Okay. Tom, address a question or a point to Mr. Farr.
I agree with everything he said, and that it was doomed to failure. And it was a doom to anarchy. And the way the West, especially our own national media, put solely the blame on the Somalis, and it was not. People don't know enough. You haven't got enough time in 1 hour to say. People don't know enough about Somalia as a nation. I know it's only a small faction of the world.
Tom, you're right about that. I want to toss the ball back to our guest, Nuruddin Farah. What should Americans, with rather vague memories now of a war that was always far away, what should we know about our own hand in your country, Mr. Farah?
Well, I think there are enough Somalis nowadays living in America. And therefore, I think a discussion should take place between Somalis and Americans as to what went wrong, who is to blame. I would say that Somalis are primarily to blame, and the reason is because if we had got rid of Siad Barre earlier, we wouldn't be in the same problem as we were. I would say that when two brothers or two sisters are in harmony together, working together, no third party can come and separate them or create enmity between them. Civil wars usually require a third party to fuel it, to arm one or the other group, and to make the civil war continue so that the local people suffer when the third parties or a third party makes mint out of it. Mm. Now, I understand that the American intervention was a well-intentioned one. But then, did somebody say, I'm not sure, if hell is paved with good intentions?
The road to hell is paved with good intentions. Let me just say, it's a great pleasure to have you on The Connection, Nuruddin Farah. I enormously enjoyed your novel, Secrets. It's my first Farah novel. Where do I go from here?
Well, I hope that you will read the other two parts in the trilogy, Maps, which is even much more lyrical than Secrets, and Gifts, which will answer some of the questions about famines and wars and how the two are linked to each other and the degradation of the environment, plus my most recent book called Yesterday, Tomorrow, which is a nonfiction book, interviews with Somali exiles and refugees, and my commentary on what took place and why the Civil War. But
I'm going to read them all. Nuruddin Farah of Secrets, Maps, Gifts, and Yesterday, Tomorrow. Thank you enormously. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Thank you. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Adaro, a provider of global content distribution services designed for e-businesses. Adaro, www.adaro.com. And by Akbar India Restaurant of Inman Square, Cambridge.